This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Now to low interest rate opportunities for nonprofits, including philanthropies. For charities lucky enough to have endowments, big pools of money that generate returns through investments, the tax rule is 5%. At least 5% of nonprofit endowment has to be given out each year. Charities worry about keeping that nest egg for future generations and are generally loath to give out more. But the huge philanthropy set up originally by the son of car magnate Henry Ford has just embarked on a new strategy. It is issuing what it calls social bonds. The Ford Foundation is borrowing $1 billion so that it can give out more money in this emergency. Darren Walker is Ford Foundation president. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, David, for having me.
All right. The Ford Foundation is rich, yet you're taking on debt. That's a liability. Eventually you have to pay back. If there was no risk, you would have done this already. Why now?
Why now? Our nonprofits are experiencing financial duress. They're experiencing canceled fundraisers, canceled corporate sponsorships, while at the very time, need is up. So our nonprofit sector needs more capital now. So we must pay out more than our traditional 5%. But it's difficult to do that during a time of market volatility, because our endowment managers advise us that it's not prudent for the long-term growth and sustainability of the foundation endowment to do that. So what's the option? The option in a time when the federal fund policy has changed to a zero Fed funds rate, it's also an opportunity to borrow at historically low rates. So the Ford Foundation is borrowing, and in fact closed, on a $1 billion first-of-its-kind social bond. And so we believe that this is a prudent way to manage our investments responsibly while at the same time addressing the urgent need to give away more money.
So you're going to probably end up here with $1 billion that you didn't know you had before. What are you going to do with that?
We are going to allocate it to institutions working on the front lines for justice in the United States and in other parts of the world, organizations working on including all Americans in voting, organizations who are providing solutions as we think about how to reimagine our law enforcement system. We're going to fund organizations working on the criminal justice system and ending mass incarceration, as well as our national arts and culture treasures. These organizations are at risk. And if we do business as usual, we will watch many of them fall off a cliff.
Now, we're talking not just in the midst of a pandemic, but of course, at a time of new energy in the social justice movement since the killing of George Floyd. Is it your sense that people of privilege are now more galvanized to push for the actions that will really change the system?
While I certainly believe that the murder of George Floyd made abundantly clear the pain of African Americans in this country that go beyond policing. And I believe for white people who do not want to live in a racist America, I think watching his murder was heartbreaking for many white Americans. But the hearts of African Americans have been broken for over 400 years because of racism in America. And now we all understand the depth of that. So I am encouraged. I'm encouraged because I see CEOs, I see philanthropists, and I see activists saying the same message that Black lives matter. Now let's see if we really mean it.
Let's, for a moment, reimagine the economy together to go beyond fixing what the pandemic broke. What would some priorities for a new economy be for you?
Well, I think that we cannot talk about renewing the economy because renewal means restarting something that was interrupted, and I do not want to restart the economy that we had. We have to reimagine, and we begin first by asking the question, why is there so much inequality in our society? Rendering a society of winners and losers. And the economy that we have had in this country in these last years has been that kind of capitalism that in no way recognized the harm that inequality does to our democracy, because inequality makes people believe that the systems that are supposed to serve them are rigged, are designed by we privileged Americans to benefit us at their expense. And if I'm to be true and candid with you, David, they are right. They are right.
We have polling to that effect that shows that across economic classes and races, people feel the economy is, quote, rigged. And so as people come up with prescriptions, what would be one of the tests for you? If it answers the question, does this make the economy more inclusive?
Absolutely. And how do we think about the allocation of capital to workers? We don't have profit sharing at scale because of an ideology that says all profits have to go to the shareholders who purchase the stock. And so workers are no longer a beneficiary of the growth capacity of their own productivity and their own inputs. It's that kind of ideology that we must address if we're to have a more inclusive capitalism that generates more opportunity for more workers.
Instead of narrow interest of shareholders, you would say probably think about it as stakeholders, because that would include employees, would also include the community.
That's right, David. And in fact, last year, the Business Roundtable issued a statement with over 170 CEOs rejecting the shareholder paradigm in favor of a stakeholder paradigm that recognizes the company needs to attend to the needs of all of those stakeholders. Yes, shareholders, but employees, customers, suppliers, and the communities where they do their work. And so this is a different idea of what capitalism ought to be and what the role of the firm is. We're going to have in this country a fundamental question about what is the role of the firm. And we need to ask questions of private equity and the ways in which private equity is financed and incented that can be a detriment to the interests of workers and to the interests of our long-term stability in our society.
Mr. Walker, you champion diversity in corporate America, and companies will also salute that goal. But you think now is the time for companies to get a lot more serious about who has the power in these powerful firms?
Absolutely. And I believe if you look at the state of representation across the boards of public companies in America, regrettably, you will see tokenism. David, you will see on a board typically one African American, one Latinx. It is rare on a board to see two or three African Americans out of 15, for example. And so we have work to do.
Now, you yourself sit on boards, and you wouldn't do it if you felt the company wasn't listening to you.
Absolutely. And I see certainly on the boards that I sit on, the kind of conversation in the boardroom around these issues has fundamentally changed in a matter of weeks. And I'm seeing it because if you're on a nominating and governance committee, you see who's in the pipeline and you talk about putting people in the pipeline. And now we are talking about putting more African Americans, more Latinx, more people of color in that pipeline for elections in years to come. And so I'm actually quite encouraged by what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing from CEOs about board diversity. The next challenge will be the C-suite. Again, we see too few African Americans. And this is going to take, I think, a mind shift, a belief that by diversifying, your business will actually do better. And David, the irony here is that we have had for years research that demonstrates this idea. And the more we see investors making these demands and holding companies accountable, the faster we will see an acceleration and take up of this idea of diversity in corporate America.
So making companies accountable, because you can count the people on the board who are diverse, you could count the people who are CEO or, you know, the C-suite. But what about other metrics?
Absolutely. So let's measure retention. Most companies are quite good at recruiting African Americans. They are not so good at retaining African Americans. And so I would like to understand why that is and to hold companies accountable to do a better job of that. We also need to ask questions about who are the vendors, who are the suppliers, who has an opportunity to participate in the business operations of the company. And so let's set some metrics around there. I think what's important here is corporate America should do what corporate America does best, measure and incent the outcomes that you want to see. If we do that with the urgency that we incent other imperatives of the company, I am confident that we will solve this challenge.
Darren Walker, president of the Ford Foundation, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.